This is KBLU LP in Logan, and I'd like to welcome you all to Baelish Anish, or Folklore Now. My name is Richard Ireland Blake, and I'm pleased to be with you here today. As this is the first broadcast of this show, I'd like to explain my objectives here. As the name of this show implies, this is the show of all things folklore. I will be discussing many things that fall within the realm of folklore. I will be bringing out stories, music, and other aspects of folklore more easily broadcast. But there will also be guests here who are either students or people who work in that field who will come and discuss the work that they are doing or other things that are going on in the realm of folklore. To me, a folklore is among the most interesting thing in the world to investigate, whether it be stories, songs, sculpture, personal art creations, or a whole slew of other things that fall into that folklore realm. Before I dig into my first piece of folklore to present to you, there is something else that I want to say to you about folklore. I'd like to ask, does everybody out there know what folklore is? So could you define it? Well, most people, if you ask them to look at something, they might be able to say, oh yes, that is clearly some form of folklore. But then how could you define the term as a whole? If you ask someone, what is folklore, what do you say? Well, a favorite source for delving into this area is the folklorist by the name of Alan Dundas. When he was asked to define folklore, he had a good deal to say about it. One of those things he had written for the sake of academia was that folklore is myths, legends, folk tales, jokes, proverbs, riddles, chants, blessings, and then a whole slew of other things that make up for a very long list. So that's a great bit of information, but that's probably not quite the answer that you want to give to someone who asks you that question at a dinner party. So what is a good quick answer for this question then? One of the professors here who came up with a good answer I'd like to present to you. It's a nice, concise answer that I know I never would have come up with on my own. And that is that if you were to ask her bluntly, what is folklore? She would say, folklore is informal traditional culture. So that's a good definition, right? Isn't that a great way, a concise way, in order to explain to someone what folklore is? But then ask that person, okay, what do you mean by informal traditional culture? You'll be stumped for a moment, and then you'd find yourself probably whipping out Alan Dundas' list. This is one of those little conundrums that come up the folklore's way. But one not need define it in order to really enjoy it. Folklore is enjoyable regardless of what you want to define it as. So now that we've gotten the intro to this folklore fairly squared away, I feel that it's time to start with a story. So this is a story from the Scottish Highlands with a bit of history mixed within the telling of a tale. It happened in an area of the Highlands that is known as Glencoe. So I first heard this story on a tour bus riding through the Scottish Highlands. So when we were driving through the Valley of Glencoe, the bus driver there was first pointing out to us, look at how beautiful this country is. This is the Valley of Glencoe. You know, this, a lot of things, you know, happen here. People love to show up here and see what Mother Nature has pretty much created. And, you know, it truly is a beautiful sight. If you look at it, you look at the rivers, you look at the mountains and everything. But then when the bus driver came to a stop, we got out of the bus stop area, and then the bus driver told us another story, and this story is concerning an event that happened on February 13th, 1692. The event is known today as the Glencoe Massacre. So, the year before 1692, King William III of England, who was also William II of Scotland, demanded that all clan chiefs in the Highlands must take an oath of loyalty to him. So many of these clan chiefs answered within the time frame of the deadline by January 1st of 1692. But the clan chief of the Glencoe MacDonalds, his name was Alistair McKeon MacDonald, didn't quite make that deadline. He finally made it either on January 2nd or 5th, depending on who you ask. And that, you know, would be no big deal if you were to ask someone today. But it was still late, and the government people decided to make an example of these, you know, insolent Highlanders. Under the leadership of Captain Robert Campbell — the Campbells are a family in the Highlands who don't like the MacDonalds too much — so under Captain Campbell, a group of soldiers came to Glencoe to carry out the orders given them. When they arrived, the unsuspecting MacDonalds accepted them into their home. You know, they shared of their hospitality for the next 2 weeks or so. It was a happy occasion as far as the MacDonalds were concerned. But then on February 13th, the royal soldiers arose in the darkness of night and fell upon their host, slaying them as they lay in their beds. 38 men, women, and children were slaughtered, while some fled into the snow-covered hills to die of exposure. While much criticism came out with this violation of the laws of hospitality, what in Scotland was called murder under trust, nobody was truly held accountable. As a result of this event, a song came into being about the murder of the MacDonalds of Glencoe, and it's called The Massacre of Glencoe. It is a traditional Scottish ballad, and the version that I am going to play for you, interestingly enough, is sung by a singer named Alistair MacDonald, not to be confused by the man who was murdered in 1692. And this is a truly moving song, and the people who sing it today, the MacDonalds, they use it as an example of something, a means of remembering it, so that they will never forget what happened on the behest of the Campbells and those royal people against the people in Glencoe.
You are hereby ordered to fall upon the rebels, the MacDonalds of Glencoe, and to put all to the sword under 70. This was the treacherous and cold-blooded order, ruthlessly carried out on 13th of February 1692, when the Campbells slaughtered their hosts, the MacDonalds, at the massacre of Glencoe. It was a bloody incident which had deep repercussions and was the beginning of the destruction of the Highlanders.
Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave, O'Donnell. Oh, cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house of MacDonnell. They came in a blizzard, we offered them heat, a roof o'er their heads, dry shoes for their feet. We wined them and dined them, they ate of our meat, and they slept in the house of MacDonnell. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave, O'Donnell. Oh, cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house, O'MacDonnell. They came from Fort William with murder in mind. The Campbell had orders King William had signed. Put all to the sword, these words underlined, and leave none alive called MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave, O'Donald. Oh, cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house, O'MacDonald. They came in the night while our men were asleep, this band of Argyles, through snow soft and deep, like murdering foxes among helpless sheep. They slaughtered the house, O'MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave, O'Donald. Oh, cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house, O'MacDonald. Some died in their beds at the hand of the foe. Some fled in the night and were lost in the snow. Some lived to accuse him who struck the first blow. But gone was the house, O'MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave, O'Donald. Oh, cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house, O'MacDonald.
That song, then, tells us the sad tale of what happened in Glencoe in 1692. Of course, this is more or less a history lesson rather than an actual folk tale. The song is a ballad, and ballads do fall into the category of a folk song. But the reason why I am telling you this story, why I think it's important in what I enjoy studying, is that anywhere where a massacre or something terrible happens, there is always some kind of ghost story and other supernatural stuff that happen all around it. And so what I'm going to do next is I want to tell you a story that a family had about an event the family had here recently. It's interesting because the way they lay it out, They knew about what happened in Glencoe back in 1692, but, you know, they were just planning on driving through the valley, getting from one end to the other. They were not looking for anything supernatural. Of course, a lot of people who tell these stories say that, but I'll take his word for it. So they're driving down the road, and they go over the hill, and then I'm going to read to you what they say about this. I found this on the blog, a blog of theirs. And the person who wrote this, his name is David C. Nichols. And this is pretty much kind of a journal entry of his. So, as we came around the bend in the road, we saw the tall figure of a man standing beside the road, looking west towards Loch Leven. As we drew near, he saw that he was anything but a normal hiker. He had long white hair and a long white mustache and was wearing not the regular kilt, but the full long plaid of the old style, seldom seen these days. He wore a bonnet bearing ribbons that streamed out behind him in the wind, and carries a cromnach, the Scottish Highland stick, famous in words like this in the song, as step I with my cromach to the isles. He was an old man, but still in the prime of his vigor. He paid no attention to us, though we must have looked strange, peering at him from within the car as we passed. My younger sister and I were awestruck by this figure. He seemed to us to have come out of a history book, perhaps even from the massacre at Glencoe. We had, of course, learned from our mother about the tragic events of 1692, when the Campbells, on behalf of the English, had massacred the MacDonalds of Glencoe in the dead of winter's night. Glencoe was a place of mystery, and perhaps some foreboding for us as we drove through. Seeing this amazing figure made it all the more magical. As we drove by, my sister and I scrambled around to look out the rear window of the car, a majorette-style Citroen, to see the old man we had just passed. But he was nowhere to be seen. He had vanished completely. What made this puzzling was that there was nowhere he could have gone. We could see the road for some 40 yards back, and the river was far too deep and swollen for him to have crossed. The hillside opposite was only fit for mountain goats, certainly not somewhere an old man, even one so vigorous, might climb. He had simply disappeared into the gentle Scottish air. This was a source of great mystery to us as children. Our parents had seen the figure as we passed, but only we children had seen that he had disappeared. In due course, the story became one of those family myths that get discussed on stormy nights and other times of reminiscence. Many years later, my brother, at the time of the trip to Skye, a baby of 5 months, was working in a government office. One of his colleagues was a Scots lady, who, though she had been out here for many years, like many Scots, had retained her distinct accent. He had occasion to recount to her our family story about the old man with his white hair who had disappeared. She looked at him for a second, then said, "Ich, you've seen the ghost of Glencoe. He appears to people from time to time. They say he is the MacIan, chief of the clan, killed during the massacre. His spirit still walks along the old road beside the River Co." This MacIan, of course, is the Alistair MacIan MacDonald that we talk about when we talk about the story about the Glencoe Massacre. So, the Glencoe Massacre is deeply rooted in many, many tales. And there's always plenty of stories out there that deal with ghosts out there on the field. Usually, always isolated incidents. It's rarely a group of people who do it. But then that's what makes it more interesting. Do you believe this man or woman or child, or don't you believe them? It is up to you whether or not you believe them. And so I wanted to give you that personal story before I move on to the next story that I will explain here in a moment. Some died in their beds at the hands of the foe. Some fled in the night and were lost in the snow. Some lived to accuse them who struck the first blow, but gone was the house of MacDonald. As we hear those tragic words of that song, many of those people fled in the night and were lost in the snow. And this next tale that I want to tell you deals with three sisters who fled in the night. Not all of them perished. After all, it did say that some lived to accuse them. Otherwise, the trial of murder under trust would not have taken place. I have a story. This is a super interesting supernatural story that I think a lot of people should all hear. And these three sisters, the children of Alistair MacDonald, who perished in their home, the three sisters were woken up, and they did not know what was happening. What follows is something that I think I ought to read, mostly read this, so that I don't miss anything. I was trying to memorize this to get a good sense of it, but right now I feel that reading this is the thing that does it the most justice. This is written by a balladeer, and this particular thing is, it's a ballad called The Three Sisters, and this is the part that I want to read to you because I feel it's the most powerful. So, concerning the three sisters, they got up, and then through the cottage door they burst. The place was echoing with screams. "Run, my darlings," the chief begged his daughters. "You'll see me again in your dreams." The little girl reached out. She didn't want to leave the chief. A Campbell man chopped her little hand off. The last thing she heard from her father was a cry of grief. The oldest sister picked her up and dragged her out, and so the daughters reluctantly fled. The youngest sister's decapitated hand leaving behind a bloody trail. So in the mountains they ran and stumbled, sick with sadness and fear. They blindly carried on through the snow. The mountains screamed in their ears. Further up the hills they went. They looked back on what had once been their home. The air started to press all around them. They realized they were all alone. Overcome with grief and death, the three sisters wailed and cried. Their home was burned to the ground. They had watched their father die. But these three girls were daughters of the chief. There was old magic in their bloodline. They mustered up all of their strength and called upon the gods of forgotten time. So, of course, the Highlanders, the Scottish Gaels, they call out upon the great ancient gods of Glencoe, the old Celtic gods that they had forgotten, but apparently they remembered in this time of grief. So terrible was the girls' fury, and so deep was their pain, that the old gods appeared before them and knelt before the three bairns, meaning the three children. The three girls demanded justice. They wanted to taste Campbell blood. They wanted vengeance for their father. Only the death of their enemies would be enough. The old gods refused them, for enough blood had been spilt on the glen. The chief's three daughters were distraught. They had wanted their revenge there and then. "This glen needs three mountains to protect it," the gods solemnly declared. "These mountains will need your souls. Not one of you can be spared." They clung to one another to face the wrath of the cruel gods together, inseparable, united, defiant, and furious. They now stand immortalized in stone and rock forever. Those gods had tricked them, the old forgotten gods of Glencoe. For here in this high highland glen, you can never know who is friend or foe. Still they stand, those three MacDonald sisters, protecting the land that had once been their home, watching over the graves of their fathers and kinsmen, still together, but forever alone. The three sisters stand there looking upon the valley to watch and protect it. And crossing over through those hills, crossing the road and looking up at the three sisters, one certainly gets an impression of something great that's there. When I happened to be there last, there was actually a lot of clouds that were covering parts of the mountains, which also gave it an extra mystic feel to it. The tour guide person who drove the bus didn't tell us about the three sisters exactly the story. They did say these are the three sisters, but he didn't decide to expound upon it. But Glencoe is an awesome place, a place full of wonder, a place full of stories, and a place where one need not deal with the horrors of the world, or at least not the ones you desire to. I always love hearing these stories. even though these are ghost stories don't frighten me. They a lot of times are sad stories. They interest me. Sometimes they can be humorous, but a lot of times they are only sad. But I feel that they are stories that shouldn't be forgotten. I would like to end this show then by just letting you all know that as I delve into the folk tales, stories, songs, and other things here, I just want to convey to everyone how important I feel it is that all of these things be remembered. And to put an interesting twist on it, there's something that I might want to ask everyone there to think about. Now, I would love to hear your stories that you might have to tell me or hear about your songs. You could either give me a recording of your voice telling a story or your voice singing a song, and I could actually play that for you over the broadcast so that we can hear your version of a tale. Me telling someone else's story might not always be the best way to convey it. And being folklore now, we also must realize that we can enjoy modern day stories as well. Things do not have to be 3 centuries old to be interesting, to be important, and worth remembering. And the way that you can get those things to me is I do have an email that you can send these things to. That is called folklorenow33@gmail.com. I am thinking that I might be putting a lot of these recordings of mine onto other social media sites if you wish to rehear them, or if Aggie Radio decides to keep them here, then keep them recorded, then they will be on there as well. But I feel that I want my stories and the things that I present to be available to all, because no story should be forgotten. If anyone thinks it's worthy to be kept alive, then it should be worthy to be kept alive, even if it is only in one or two places where that can be found. I would like to thank you all for listening to this broadcast. As I promised, I will occasionally be bringing in other people. In fact, for the next little while, I will probably have quite a few people that I will be bringing in, especially since this is Utah State and I'm affiliated with the folklore program. Other people affiliated with the folklore program I wish to bring in as well, and let them say what they have to say. Everyone's story is important. The next time you hear from me, there will probably be other people that I will be talking to, and then I will likely end with a little thought or a piece of my own, or something that I dug up that I think is important for everyone to hear. So please do tune in, for I am really excited to be able to present these things to you, and I'd love your feedback to know how you feel about this and what you think is something that's worthy of putting up here on the air. And I'll talk to you all on the next show.